And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Last week we had with us a very scholarly gentleman who's written a number of books on secret societies, but also on religion and the culture. And his newest book is entitled Judaism Discovered. And as we talked last week, a lot of people now are bashing Islam and the Muslim religion. And certainly it's heretical in terms of relationship to Christianity. And there's a big, big gap between Islam and Christianity. But Judaism, as Michael Hoffman demonstrated last week, and as we're going to talk about today, is a despicable religion that, I mean, takes Islam 50 steps further, in my opinion. And but we'll ask Brother Michael Hoffman about that. Judaism Discovered. I have a copy on my desk here. And if you haven't got it yet, you're going to want it. So get you a pencil and paper or pen and paper ready for our address if you don't know it by heart after all these years. Our good friends out there listening on shortwave radio and internet, or maybe you're listening on one of the CDs or audio tapes that we offer of each and every program. And those go out and are distributed all over the world. And I know some of you actually make copies and pass around to your friends. And I encourage you to do that. From time to time, people say, Tex, can I make copies of your audio tapes? Absolutely. You can burn copies of our, you know what I mean? I mean, reproduce. I got to use my words right. CDs, they call it burning, you know, making copies. But you can do that. And you can make a thousand of them if you can give them out. And we want the word to get out here. We're not so interested in copyright. And I don't want you, of course, to just reprint my books or anything like that. But certainly excerpts and these tapes and such, we want to get the message out. Now, today we want to talk, this is part two of Judaism Discovered. We're going to cover a lot of things. I'm going to ask Michael Hoffman. He's going to be the sort of the teacher today for us. I'm going to ask him about magic, sorcery, voodoo, hatred, and the Jewish Talmud toward Christians, and blasphemy toward Jesus. Could that be so? We'll ask him those questions. There's much about sex in the Talmud that he discusses in his over 1,100-page book, Judaism Discovered. This is an encyclopedia, my friends. That's really what this is. You need this book. Lust for money by the Jews. You know, Jesus offered the Jews. He told them they had to make a choice actually between God and Mammon. I'm going to ask Michael Hoffman what the Jews chose and what their most holy book, the Talmud, says about that. So we have a lot of things to talk about today. Last week we talked about the Talmud's Babylonian connection, the allegations of anti-Semitism that are dredged up against anyone that goes against the Jewish or the Judaic religion. We talked about a little bit about Jewish supremacism, racism, bigotry. So we have a full agenda. Let's get right on with it. Michael Hoffman, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you, Tex. It's good to be back.
Well, I want to ask you before we begin, had two questions that strike me. President Jimmy Carter has been bitterly criticized, and not just by the Jews, but by all their minions in the press. I see Sean Hannity bashes President Jimmy Carter every chance he gets. Evidently has a new book about, book out about how we can obtain peace in the Holy Land. Now, what about that? First of all, you know, Jesus himself said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall see the kingdom of God. You would think that people at CNN, Fox News, the other networks would be just proclaiming President Carter as a great peacemaker. But they don't, do they?
No, unfortunately, to the great scandal of the gospel, we have so-called Christianity. It's not Christianity. I call it churchianity, but these so-called Christians are allied with war Zionism. And some people say, well, it's just an overemphasis on the Old Testament. The Old Testament punished the people that Israel came in contact with because of a combination of a practice of sorcery and sex that was combined in those people. Never does the God of Israel say, well, you're superior people, go ahead and take these innocent people and crush them. You won't find that in the Old Testament. So this alibi that the Old Testament is the basis of either Christian support for the Israeli state or for the actions of the Israelis is bogus. And Jimmy Carter, I didn't agree with everything he did. I thought he made plenty of mistakes as president. But you know, as Christians, we've got to forgive if a man makes a real effort to pursue amends for his life. And I believe that's what Jimmy Carter is doing in his old age. He's rather fearlessly speaking out about what he calls apartheid Israel. Now, we know with the Obama era that many people have execrated the American South and Christian people in the South because they once practiced segregation, and I don't want to get into the do's and don'ts of that. But I think it's highly hypocritical if you're going to take the American South to task for segregation when the Israeli state is practicing apartheid, which is the South African word for segregation, and imposing it by military force on those Palestinians. So it's one thing to do this as a result of power politics and what von Clausewitz talked about. It's quite another level of abomination to do it in the name of Jesus Christ, who said, "My kingdom is not of this world," and to put away the sword. And it's a scandal to people that we're trying to convert in the rest of the world. We're trying to evangelize the world for the gospel. What must they think when they imagine that Christianity is actually this churchianity? It's doing the work of the devil is what it really is.
I totally agree with you. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, because your book covers many other subjects, but it really centers in on the religion of the Jews. Because, you know, a lot of people ask me, Michael, they say, Tex, you need to distinguish between the Zionists and other Jews. The problem is that this Talmud is so affected, is so ingrained in the Jewish culture that it's very hard. You just scratch beneath the surface, and even those that claim to be secular Jews seem to be affected by the Talmud, and especially its Jewish supremacism, anti-Christian bigotry, and so forth. Have you found that to be true?
Well, that's a very good question, because what you're hitting on is this schizophrenia that claims that, especially in the conservative movement, it's very strong, that claims that the atheist Zionists or the secularists are really the problem. And boy, if we could just make an alliance with these wonderful religious Judaics, these conservative and traditional Orthodox Judaics, wouldn't that be just fine? And supposedly the storyline, or the Hasbara, to use the Israeli word for propaganda, is that these Orthodox rabbinic Judaics are supposedly against abortion and they're against homosexuality. And they basically have a religion which is the Old Testament without Jesus Christ. Well, every single one of those assertions is a bold-faced lie. None of them are true. Orthodox Judaism believes in abortion. In fact, it has actually furnished in a sub rosa manner the alibi for abortion that liberals use today. It certainly permits homosexuality, as I establish in my book. And it is in no way, as we've already discussed, an Old Testament religion. So wrong on all three counts. Any alliance with Christ-haters and people whose so-called sages, as they refer to the fathers and founders of the Talmud, who advocate the murder of Christians, are really just out of their minds. I mean, it's mass insanity based on ignorance.
You know, one thing in the Bible that's very interesting is in Revelation 13, where it talks about those who are witnesses for Christ, because they oppose, okay, the beast and his system in the last days, that they actually will have their heads cut off. They'll be beheaded and become martyrs for Christ. In the Talmud, it actually talks about, or is it in the Noahide law specifically, talks about cutting off the heads of those idolaters such as Christians.
Yes, the Talmudic definition of an idolater is someone who worships Jesus Christ. So under these Noahide laws, which have been passed under Ronald Reagan and each successive president under the public law related to the birth date of a grand rabbi, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the late rabbi of the Chabad-Lubavitch sect, which is the most politically connected of all Orthodox Judaism. And this is hailed by people like Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court Justice of the United States, another traitor who these conservatives believe to be a wonderful Christian gentleman. He just lectured at the Institute of American and Talmudic Law, and there's no such thing as American and Talmudic Law. The very phrase itself is an oxymoron. But he went to New York and spoke to some 300 lawyers. He does this practically every year because one of his law school's buddies is Nathan Lewin, an Orthodox Judaic who has represented some of those terrible kosher slaughter crooks over there in Iowa that we've heard about in the news lately. And they advanced this idea that, isn't it wonderful? The rabbis want to honor Noah, and they want to put through these generic kind of laws about ethics. Well, first of all, the Talmud disparages Noah. They say he was a drunk. They tell terrible, they make up terrible sexual stories about what he and his sons did on the ark. So these Noahide laws, as they're called, are part of a doubling game, a shadow game. In the Talmud, when they're referring to biblical characters, quite often these are not actual biblical characters. They're the Talmudic distorted version of them. And so, because it's all filtered through their traditions of men, it's not really Noah. And these Noahide laws would, once they're in place, they would result, they could result in true Christians being executed, as you say.
Now, Justice Antonin Scalia, of course, is a Catholic, supposedly. Last week you mentioned a term that I had never really heard before, but I sort of liked it, Michael. You used the term neocon Catholics. A neocon really is a, I don't even call it a euphemism. It's a pretty accurate word for or term, meaning those who are Judaizers or who sponsor radical Zionism, inhumane, ungodly Zionism. But you use the term neocon Catholics. Now you're discussing Antonin Scalia. We also know that Pope John Paul II, and now apparently the new Pope Benedict, seem to be Judaizers as well. Are they neocon Catholics?
I would reserve the term neocon for those who more or less have an infernal marriage between the Talmudic or Zionist gnosis in this war Zionism, and it's not entirely clear that the current occupant of the throne there in Rome actually corresponds with that, but he certainly has bought into this John Paul II modernist theology, referring to these Khazars, as I call them. I don't want to honor them with the name Jew. They can't trace their lineage back. How do we know they're Jews? I don't believe anything else they say. Why should I believe that? But this whole concept that they are our elder brothers in the faith was pioneered by John Paul II. And if we look at the Gospel of John in chapter 8, we see that Jesus was confronted with this idea when the Pharisees said they were the children of Abraham and they had the covenant. And he said, well, physically you're of Abraham, but spiritually and ideologically you're of the devil. So how can there possibly be an elder brother covenant that is still alive today? It's a hoax. We Christians are the ones who have that. And the neocon Catholic phenomenon in the United States has really emerged with the post-conciliar movement, that's to say after the Second Vatican Council in the U.S., where there was this tremendous pressure to cozy up to Judaism, which we're seeing at this very time with the whole concept that the Holocaust is an exclusive event in world history, and anyone who questions any aspect of it is some kind of heretic or idolater. But neocon Catholics in the United States have been big supporters of the war Zionism of the George W. Bush regime, and they're not to be confused with the medieval Catholics, who, of course, had a very clear philosophy and theology of Judaism, which has been completely overthrown by these recent modern popes.
Yeah, the new catechism of Pope John Paul II basically calls the Jews our elder brothers. And of course, even Benedict, I believe you're right, he's been carrying on the same doctrine that the Jews do not need Jesus. They have their own ancient sages, and they can follow the old covenant and receive a heaven. So I think this is apostasy, and, you know, I'm not putting words in your mouth. This is Tex Morris saying that Benedict continues. By the way, just 6 weeks ago, Benedict had the bishops come to Rome, I believe, or Assisi. I'd have to look in my files and find out which. And there they were all instructed by a Jewish rabbi who instructed them on the Holy Bible. Now, what a Jewish rabbi has to teach the so-called Christians is very interesting. It tells me the bishops, they must know very little about the Bible. The Catholic bishops, I suspect that's true, or they wouldn't need a unsaved, Christ-hating Jewish rabbi to teach them his interpretation of the Bible. And that was Pope Benedict. So you can reserve your opinion, but my opinion is pretty well made. By the way, this priest Williamson of the old, you know, Latin Rite, who has been, the excommunication has now been taken away from him. But I read today, just today, the Vatican, evidently with Benedict's approval, has pointedly told Williamson that even though he is no longer excommunicated, he will not be allowed to say Mass and perform other priestly functions unless he accepts the Jewish version of the Holocaust.
Yes, he will be forbidden to be admitted to episcopal functions within the church unless he says that the gassings of Judaic people took place in Auschwitz, and unless he bows down to the idol of this 6 million figure, which has cropped up Kabbalistically throughout the history of the Judaics. And this is a complete departure from the historic Catholic faith to establish belief in the rabbinic dogma. They call it in their mystical theology the Shoah, S-H-O-A-H.
But it's, that very word was in the press release from the Vatican.
And it means Holocaust. But to establish belief in a rabbinic dogma as a criterion for qualifying as a shepherd.
Can you believe that?
Church, you couldn't make this stuff up.
But, Michael, you know, of course we oppose that, but, you know, we should very quickly say to people listening to us out there, I believe there are very few Southern Baptist pastors today, for example, who can keep their post, you know, who can keep their pulpit if they came out and said, I don't believe a lot of the propaganda, for example, the gassing, or the 6 million number of the Holocaust. So just as the Vatican has said, you know, you can't be a priest or carry on at least the priestly duties if you don't believe the Holocaust fiction, Baptists and Assemblies of God, they have basically the same criteria, even though each church claims it's independent. I'm pretty sure that's something that gets you in a heap of trouble among the other Southern Baptists, don't you think?
Well, I think that that's very objective of you to notice that in Protestantism as well as Catholicism. They're both afflicted by this, but I also see a larger dilemma, and that's the overthrow of our Jeffersonian principles of our founding fathers. They came here to get away from a state religion. The establishment of one particular denomination as the religion of the United States. And now, in the otherwise agnostic West, we have this de facto state religion of the gas chambers. And the proof of that is that in Europe, nobody goes to jail for denying that Jesus Christ resurrected from the dead, which the Apostle Paul said, if Christ didn't resurrect from the dead, we've got nothing. We're through. We're finished. Our religion is a hoax. Mm. So it's a direct attack on the very core of our religion. No one is jailed for that, and neither am I advocating that they should be. However, we can tell what is truly sacred in the West when we find out that those who so-called deny gas chambers in Auschwitz, for example, the very erudite and skilled former Max Planck Institute chemist Germer Rudolph, who is in jail now in Germany for asking scientific questions about the gas chambers, he is in jail. So the question is, what is really sacred in what's supposed to be Christian America or the Christian West? And I find it's this religion that I call Holocaustianity, which is really the religion of Judaism for Gentiles. It's a way to get Gentiles to reverence the Judaic and to look fondly on the rabbis in the entire palimpsest of fraud and traditions of men, and this is the entry for that. And anyone who doubts it in Europe can go to jail, and anybody who doubts it here in the United States can have his reputation ruined. And as you say, be you a Baptist preacher or be you a Catholic priest, you can lose your office.
Okay, let's go to another area. And by the way, I agree with you completely on that. Let's go to another area. Vile hatred of Christians and utter blasphemy toward Jesus. In your book, Judaism Discovered, you cover each of these topics quite a bit. Now, the chief rabbi, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi at this time, a man named Metzger, Yonah Metzger, recently said that he wants to sponsor a United Nations of Religions. He wants to bring all the religions together. Do you think that Metzger is going to give up then this Talmudic hatred of Christianity and blasphemy toward Jesus so that he can have a United Nations of Religions?
It's just a public relations lie. There isn't any religion on earth that is less ecumenical, less tolerant, less interested in unity with anyone else than Orthodox Judaism or the Talmud. It's a ferociously, savagely racist, anti-Christian religion. And what he's saying is based on this widespread illiteracy that's in the Christian and Gentile world concerning the actual contents of the Talmud, because the Judaism's greatest rabbi, if you ask me to pick one Orthodox rabbi that is most revered both in the Gentile world and in the world of Judaism, I would have to say it's Moses Maimonides. It's his legend that has deceived the Muslims, it's deceived the Christians, it's even deceived atheistic left-wing so-called enlightened intellectuals. Almost everybody across the spectrum believes that Moses Maimonides, the rabbis refer to him by the acronym Rambam, but we'll call him by his name Maimonides, they all believe that he is this paradigm of tolerance and suggesting that he's benevolent along the lines of this Rabbi Metzger. Metzger, by the way, means butcher. But actually, Maimonides is the one who has some of the most ferocious injunctions and admonitions against Christ and Christians. He openly says that heretics, not only Christians, but, for example, the Karaites, the tiny, tiny sect of Judaics who do cling to the Old Testament and who do reject the Talmud, and they're just a handful. I wouldn't want to demographically estimate it, probably somewhere in maybe the tens of thousands in the world today. They've been savagely persecuted by the rabbis. And then Maimonides reserves his special, particular vitriol for Christians. And he says, in the very clever and shrewd and sly way for which the Talmudic rabbis are infamous among those who have made a study of it, he says that when circumstances allow, and he establishes a context wherein these circumstances can be deduced, for example, when there is Judaic supremacy in the world, when Judaics are on the ascendant, when they have an inordinate influence over the Gentiles' courts, over the Gentiles' judiciary. So we may be moving to this time that Maimonides said it was okay to go ahead and kill Christians openly. And then he said at other times when Christians are dominant, such as in the Middle Ages, in the period that he lived in, then he said that such killing and destruction of Christians and Gentiles had to be done by surreptitious means. For example, he noted in his Mishnah Torah that if you see a Gentile falling down in a hole, don't give him a ladder. If you see him drowning, let him drown. In other words, by omission, you would destroy them. But then he said when Judaism is in the ascendant, you can destroy them by commission. And he also has a similar set of situation ethics for how Judaic doctors are to medically treat Gentiles. Where there is an anti-Talmudic Gentile government in power, then these doctors have to treat the Gentiles and do a good job of it. But where Judaism is on the ascendant, then it's actually against the Judaic law to give proper medical care to Gentiles. Now, can you imagine the havoc that that may have already played in our hospitals in America today when some loyal Christian comes in there and some Judaic doctor who's following Maimonides, the greatest sage of all the sages in Judaism, and he's thinking to these texts that recommend that he doesn't treat this lady, that he either lets her die by benign neglect or he actively participates in her death. So all talk of a one-world, happy-face benevolence on the part of Rabbi Metzger or Maimonides or anyone else tainted by Orthodox Judaism is a complete and total imposture.
Well, you know, talking about that, how Jewish doctors in a society where the Jews have the upper hand are to surreptitiously, in other words, covertly engineer the death of Christian patients, that's a scary thing. And it brings to mind Stalin's fear of the Jewish doctors in the Soviet Union. You know, he said that the Jewish doctors that he had a plot to kill him. Well, since it appears that in his later years, Stalin attempted to have a coup d'etat against the Jews. You know, the Jews, as you and I both know, basically they were the communists. They were the commissars. They were the commandants of the Soviet gulags. And evidently, Stalin, you might say, from what I see, declared war belatedly against some of the Jews, even though he kept Kaganovich and others in power. But isn't it interesting that Stalin said that there's a plot by the Jewish doctors to kill me? And, of course, he died under what some people say are mysterious circumstances.
Well, it could be. I'm not an authority on Russian history, but it could be. But you're certainly right that Bolshevism from the beginning, and particularly under Uncle Joe Stalin, as the American boobs referred to this mass murderer, the Israeli state actually was founded. These Christians who believe that the Israeli state was founded by God, it was founded by the godless United Nations and key support and recognition offered by both Joseph Stalin, the communist dictator, and 33rd degree Freemason Harry S. Truman. But for the sake of your listeners there, Tex, who want to challenge some of the assertions I've made about Maimonides, I did want to give one citation. Maimonides in Avodat Kokavim, Chapter 10, states, and I have this reproduced in my book in the actual page from the Talmud, from his Mishnah Torah, the post-Talmudic writing, he says, "Show no mercy to a non-Jew." Again, we have to understand that that dictum of his is within the context of the situation ethics that I mentioned. And how that is applied depends on whether a Christian government is fully aware of the dangers of rabbis and Talmudism and is vigilant, or if it's a government we have today which really lets them more or less rule through their puppets.
Well, let's take a look at the Middle East today. We have Israel in 2006 carrying on a 33-day massacre, a war, mostly by air, but also on the ground by tanks and other vehicles, against the Lebanese. This year, 2008, moving on in 2009, we have the genocidal massacre by the Israeli Defense Forces perpetrated against the Palestinians. And we're talking about both Muslims on the whole, but also Christians in Gaza and Palestine, and particularly a very strong a Christian element in Lebanon, so that really they were carrying out these atrocities against Christians and Muslims in these two wars over the last few years. The Israelis were. Do you think, in your opinion, based on your study of the Talmud and in your book, Judaism Discovered, do you believe that these same principles, these Talmudic principles, are being carried out against the Lebanese and the Palestinians?
Well, we know that for a fact because these rabbinic counselors, councils that are the spiritual directors of the so-called settlers, in other words, the people who are most zealous about stealing the Palestinians' land and have created these illegal settlements, their ideology is right in the open for anybody to read in these various Hebrew language newspapers, which are now being translated and available on the internet, such as Haaretz. That's H-A-A-R-E-T-Z. You can Google that. And every morning they give you the news in there. It's filtered. It isn't 100% objective or correct, but nonetheless, you can get a real flavor for what's going on. And these rabbinic counselors, both the settlers' rabbinic counselors and even the chief rabbis of the two ethnic groups in the Israeli state, there are several ethnic groups, of course, but the two leading ones, the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi, or Khazarian, as I would call it, all of these have openly said that the Israeli soldiers should show no mercy to the Palestinians, including civilians.
Wow. Michael, hold on just a minute. I want to go forth into this in the next half hour or so. But right now we have to take a quick break. My guest is Michael Hoffman. He's author of a tremendous new encyclopedic book, Judaism Discovered. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this brief message. Judaism. It's just Old Testament religion, isn't it? Well, Michael Hoffman proves exactly the opposite. It has nothing to do with the Old or New Testament. It has to do with satanic doctrines. doctrines of devils have inspired rabbis over the centuries to create a man-made religion totally opposite of what the truth is. And this is the only book I know that illustrates this very fact. You must have this book. Somebody out there is telling you how God says we're to bless Israel. Well, the way to bless Israel is to bring Jesus Christ to them. But wait, the rabbis hate Jesus. They hate Christ. They hate the Bible. They hate the New Testament. And they have their own religion, a most unholy religion. A religion, as we discovered last week, and we're going to talk about it a little further, would hold that the Jews are the most precious race on earth, and thus theirs is a very bigoted religion. You must have this book. Over 1,100 pages. Can you imagine? 1,102 to be exact. I think it throws in Michael Hoffman's picture on page 1102 or something. So you'll even see what Brother Michael Hoffman looks like. And you might want to, especially if you have his book, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare. We'll talk about psychological warfare. This is spiritual warfare. Judaism discovered. You can discover the awful truth about Judaism. And no matter what some poor misled Christian believes, you can say, wait just a minute. You need to check it out. Now, one of the things I love about this book is that Hoffman documents what he says in the words of the Jewish academics themselves, the Jewish rabbis. You'll see them speak for themselves. None of this is made up. This is what the Jews teach. Now, if you want to know what Jesus teaches, go to the New Testament and you'll see the words of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus and the apostles and the prophets. If you want to know what Judaism teaches, don't go to the Old Testament. You won't find it there. You'll find it in this book, though. Judaism Discovered, a giant book, hardcover. You must have it. And by the way, if you have a pastor that just doesn't believe this, that really thinks Jews are holy and really believes there's a place called the Holy Land, well, get this book for him. Get this book for your pastor, for his library. And pray that he'll read it. It deserves to be in every pastor's library because he can pick it off of the shelf and has a very fine index in the back, and he can look up different things and see the incredible horror of the religion, of the sorcery. Well, it would take us days and days and days just to tell you what's in this book. That's why you need it for yourself. And let me tell you something. I understand we're having the coldest winter on record in the United States, so much for global warming. But I couldn't think of a better fireside book than Judaism Discovered. You know, you're there by the fireside at night, got a lot of time on your hands. It's too icy. The roads are too icy to get out. Order this book. You'll have many weeks of research and discovery. Now, here's how to get this book. A total of $50. That includes shipping and handling. $50. Again, it's a very heavy, hardcover book. It's worth every penny, I promise you. And little hint for you, dear friends, if you want to, and it's not a bad idea, call your local Christian bookstore and ask them, do they have Judaism Discovered in? If so, go down there and buy it. That's good. Then they'll have to give you that copy. They'll order another one for someone else, so you keep it going. And if they don't have it on the shelves, well, ask them to order it. Say, this is a great book about Judaism, and you need it in your Christian bookstore. Well, I don't think they're going to order it, but, you know, you never know. Pray a little bit, and God can do miracles. And I believe he's even moving the heart of some Christian bookstore owners to discover the truth about Judaism. But if you can't get it through your Christian bookstore, do order it from us. We have it. We have plenty of copies. We'll get it winging right to you in the mail. So here's how to get it. $50 now. Ask for Judaism Discovered by Michael Hoffman. Or just say, I want the Judaism book. Right now, it's the only book. We did have a book by Michael Hoffman called Judaism's Strange Gods. But he's basically incorporated everything from that book into this one. So this is the complete version, okay? And if you have that book, good. It'll be a little companion. You can take that out because it's a good book too. But here is the authority on Judaism. And I want you to have a copy, please. I don't, you know, direct you. I beg you. I beseech you to get this book. Okay. Our toll-free number, phone number in Canada and the United States is 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. Of course, we're on powerofprophecy.com, the web page, and the book is right there on the home page. And click right onto it. It'll take you to the description of the book, and you can order it using your charge cards there as well. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-234-9673. Hey, just send $50. Put a little note in, say, text, send me the book, Judaism Discovered, and we'll get it right away to you, okay? We only take a couple of days at the most to get a book out of here. And our address is Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson, that's Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, or just put TX. We like to say that we're the Republic of Texas, but keep that sort of quiet, would you? You know, you could get a government SWAT team come down on you if you say you're the Republic of Texas. But I'm a good American. I love America, but I'm a Texan too. So we have to have our priorities straight. Kingdom of Heaven first, Texas second, and America third. And I love all three of them. Okay. Now, our address again, Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733 in the United States of America. Now let's return to our regular program. My guest is Michael Hoffman. He's given us a lot of information. We're going to continue on. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tex.
Okay. Now we're talking about the Jewish rabbis teaching the Israeli Defense Forces, you were saying, to have no mercy. So they actually have like rabbi chaplains that go with the troops to the front lines, right?
Yes, they handed out booklets during the massacre in Gaza. They distributed them to the Israeli army. And this was mentioned, I referred earlier to the Hebrew language newspaper Haaretz, which is published in the Israeli state and then translated on the internet into English. And in the booklet, they said, quote, "We must not cede a single inch of Israel." And they went on to say that the dehumanize the Palestinians and to use whatever means were necessary in order to overcome them. So in public, we're told that the Palestinians are these vicious people who use their own children as human shields. But then in private, or at least in only in the Israeli world where the readership is intended to be largely Israeli and Judaic, we find out that there is an open admonition to attack civilians, to dehumanize them first, and then to regard their lives as not as the same value as the Israelis. And all of this is derived from the Talmud's deprecation of the Gentile in general.
Okay, let's talk about that. It has been alleged that the Talmud actually uses words like goyim or cattle to describe Gentiles. Is this so?
Well, it does. You know, goyim is simply a generic term for other nations, the strangers, those who are not of Israel, and is not denotatively negative, but connotatively in the way that is used as a kind of slang for everyone who is not Judaic. It can be negative, but certainly there are other terms such as shaget, and for the Gentile woman, there are also deprecatory phrases that are used, and definitely in the Talmud, there is this dehumanization of the Gentile in general under a number of terms, and when the Talmud began to be translated and more Gentiles were paying attention to it, then they started using euphemisms for Gentiles, such as the Cuthian, or words to that effect. Occam is another favorite. But if you get the Sonsino edition, the best translation in English is the Steinsaltz, but if you get the older English translation of the Talmud called the Sonsino, you'll see in the footnotes that they actually say, they admit that these words Cuthian and Occam, when they're talking about destroying people, robbing from them, lying to them, are actually references to Gentiles. So it was a cosmetic euphemism that was applied later on when they thought that Gentiles were quote-unquote prying into their sacred text. But it certainly is there in the terminology, forms one of the basic pursuits of my book to document the trail of this dehumanization of Gentiles in general. And the Palestinians are referred to as Amalek in the Israeli state today. But that's an incorrect use of an Old Testament term, because God said he would blot out the memory of Amalek forever. He said he would do it, and he has done it. The only ones who are reviving the memory of Amalek today are the Israelis, who are falsely attributing to the Palestinians characteristics of Amalek. And by doing so, they're going against God, who promised he would blot out their memory. And the reference to Amalekites is to people who practiced sins which offended Yahweh, the God of Israel. How can anybody claim that these innocent Palestinians who are just trying to live their lives, who were pushed off the land and pushed onto Gaza, are in any way offending the God of Israel, God the Father, Jesus' divine Father? There's no basis for that claim. But these are the kind of pamphlets, genocidal pamphlets, that are distributed by the supposed apostles of love, the Israeli Orthodox rabbis in the Middle East, and the general public doesn't know about it.
Does Judaism discuss such things as what happens during the Purim celebrations by the Jews in their synagogues?
Yes, Purim, P-U-R-I-M, allegedly based on the Book of Esther, is actually Orthodox Judaism's Halloween celebration. Now, the more I talk about this, I wonder if they're not going to tone down their festivities, but probably I'm not that influential or well-known, and I don't know how many of your listeners are able to get up into some of the ghettos in Brooklyn, New York, or down in Miami Beach, or even over in the Israeli state when some of these Christians go on pilgrimage over there. But if you go into the Hasidic enclaves during Purim, I would imagine that a true Christian would be appalled by the Halloween cavorting, men dress as women. I've even seen films of Israelis dressed as Palestinian terrorists with one of those detonator belts on, making fun of their own people who have, certainly innocent Israelis have died at the hands of Palestinians who are resisting Israeli occupation. And every type of what we would call Bacchanalian or occult dimensions you will find in this celebration of Purim, which is also a celebration of vengeance, and it involves the making of ears, and the shape of breads and pastries are baked in the shape of Haman's ears, and it's a very distasteful and vulgar celebration of vengeance, which is completely inimical to the spirit of Christians and the New Testament Christianity. But it does give people insight into the fundamentally pagan Babylonian nature of the supposed Old Testament religion of Judaism.
Well, you know, Michael, I had read in one publication about this children eating cookies that are shaped like Haman's ears and chomping down on them at Purim and all that during these celebrations. And I thought it was grotesque, and I wondered if it could be true. And about 3 years ago, I did an online internet study, and I went to the websites of dozens of synagogues and Jewish meeting halls across America, and actually I found several of them that were talking about all the fun that they were going to have at Purim, and how one of them even specifically said, we're going to have Haman's ears cookies. They call it the flesh. It was literally the flesh of Haman cookies, and they actually talked about that, how much fun the kids were going to have eating the flesh of Haman cookies. So it is true, and there it was. And by the way, have you done any research, or does Judaism discovered this, examine, you know, this war against the Palestinians in Gaza evidently was kicked off during the week of Hanukkah. Have you found that many of the atrocities of the Israelis are begun or take place during their high holy days?
Good question, because as it so happens, we invaded, the Americans invaded Iraq during the Purim week in 2003, coinciding, Bush made sure that it coincided with the week of Purim or Purim. And I do find that on occasion you will see this synchronicity between these Talmudic holidays and some sort of shedding of the blood of non-Judaic.
Mm. do you have an opportunity in this book, I know it's not about that, to talk about the connection of the Masonic lodges with Judaism?
I go into some of that in secret societies and psychological warfare, but certainly where we look on the suppression of the name of Yahweh, where, and I know that you're a fan of King James Bible here, and I might be stepping on some toes, but if I am, you let me know. But where, and it's not just the King James Bible, you can see it in many Bibles, where you see, whenever you see the word Lord in capitals, L-O-R-D, that's, Bible scholars will admit that that's Y-H-V-H, and a lot of us pronounce it as Yahweh. For example, we say Hallelujah, that would be the first name of God's name. And I don't really want to get into the name thing. I certainly believe that Christians are blessed if they pray to God and they pray in the name of Jesus, but where I do have a problem is when people start forbidding the pronunciation and use of the name of Yahweh. I don't think that people have to be told that it's mandatory or they're doing something wrong if they don't, but when people are forbidden to pronounce it, as the rabbis forbid their Talmudic adherent Judaics to pronounce it, then we've got a problem. Now, to answer your question, how does this lead into that problem? What happened was one of the attractions of the Masonic occult for the Kabbalistic Judaism was the power of God's name, and how by suppressing God's name, when God wanted it to be known, he said, my people will call themselves by my name, but very few of us say we're followers of Yahweh. Maybe that's part of our weakness in America today. Well, that name was suppressed for hundreds and hundreds of years because Christians picked up the superstitious fear that the rabbis had of pronouncing it, but it was actually more than a superstition. What they did was they used the word very often in occult rituals, and it got this superstitious aura of power around it, and that was then transmitted to the Western secret societies. And if you delve into the roots of the occult imperium during the Renaissance, during the Elizabethan era, when a lot of these groups really began to flower and to establish their roots in the formerly Christian West, you will see that a centerpiece of the so-called Christian Kabbalah and the so-called white magic that these people thought that they were using was the blasphemous use of the sacred name of Yahweh to invoke powers and spirits. And so they made it into a forbidden thing, and that became the grounds for great attraction among Gentile occultists. And, of course, there are many other features of it, and a large part of America's addiction to the Zionist project prior to the rise of these TV fundamentalist dispensationalist preachers was through the influence of the Masons and the Shriners and the allied groups, who basically told their followers that if you want to get ahead in the world materialistically and if you want to get ahead in business, then you need to be good to the Judaics in your midst, and they forwarded the power in that way. And, of course, we have one of the founders of the Ars Quator Coronatorum Research Lodge of Freemasonry in Great Britain, Sir Charles Warren, who would later on play a role in covering up the identity of Jack the Ripper and the Jack the Ripper murders. In the 1860s, the Masons dispatched him to do key archaeological work under the ruins of the temple. In fact, to this day, one of the tunnels there is named after Sir Charles Warren, Warren's Tunnel, and this was all to help the rabbis in the grand project of rebuilding the Third Temple, which remains, in my opinion, the supreme goal of Freemasonry to this day.
Yeah, you know, John J. Robinson expressed that very goal in his book, Born in Blood, which is a history of Freemasonry. Well, let's cover another area here. Let's go to sex. I guess it all ends up in sex when you go to these cults of Satan, and certainly the Judaic cult seems to be aiming a lot of that. You know, I get a number of publications, not all of them, but, you know, the Jerusalem Post, Jerusalem Report, and others. And it seems like there is an infatuation almost as much as we see in Hollywood with sex, with lust. And you see so many rabbis being arrested for molesting little children and for sexually harassing and raping women. Even the president of Israel was justly evidently accused of doing that to women, forcing sex. And it seems like the whole society, sexual trafficking in Israel is a horrible epidemic. And, of course, it is an absolute fact that in places like Northridge, areas of Northridge area of Los Angeles, the smut and the X-rated pornography is almost entirely a Jewish occupation. So the pornography we see spread around the world is mostly produced by Jewish movie makers. All this being said, what does the Talmud have to do, Michael, in your research and findings with this perverted attitude and conduct towards sexual behavior?
Well, as bad as it is, and you've certainly laid out the more sinister dimensions of it, it's actually worse because into the scenario that you've painted, we have to add the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Because some of the biggest practitioners of sexual depravity, molestation, and homosexuality are these black-coated, very upright, conservative-looking Orthodox Judaics that so many Christians believe are a kind of paradigm for them. And they would be shocked to know the level of the hypocrisy involved here because, as you're suggesting, the root of this plague of sexual degeneracy, certainly as Christians we believe that healthy marital relations between a married man and woman are of God, and we're not opposed to that in any way, but we're talking about the unnatural perversion of this, and this does definitely come out of the rabbinic tradition. I'll give you an example. This is from the Babylonian Talmud Tractate Sanhedrin 54b, and it illustrates now the lawyer's mentality of these loopholes that they create. They'll state a law where the Old Testament says a man is not to treat another man to lie with him as he would lie with a woman. That seems to most of us Christians to be an open and shut case without a great deal of ambiguity. The rabbis are above all lawyers, and the Talmud is above all a lawyer's book. And so it's just, as you know, if you've dealt with lawyers, there's all kinds of loopholes. And here's one of them, and I'll quote directly from BT Sanhedrin 54b. If someone unwittingly perpetrated sodomy upon a man and also allowed himself to be sodomized by a man, he is liable for two sin offerings. And one sin offering for violating the prohibition of you shall not lie with a man in the manner of a woman, and a second sin offering for violating the prohibition of nor shall there be a male prostitute of the sons of Israel. A sin offering. What they're talking about is that you would bring to the rabbinate a bag of money, or if you didn't have the money, some food, when you were either sodomizing somebody or allowing yourself to be sodomized. And notice there's no suggestion here of coercion. It says that it's unwittingly. In other words, on the basis of 100 different transparently self-serving excuses, are these permissible grounds? For example, an unwitting would be, I was drunk. I was out of my mind. I didn't intend it. It just happened without me realizing it. All of these loopholes, you can tell to the rabbi, well, this is why I engaged in homosexual sex, and therefore, as a result of this alleged, and you know, I tend to laugh at this because it's so transparently ludicrous and self-serving, but as a result of this loophole, Judaic men can engage in homosexual sex with each other according to the Talmud. Now, if people say, oh, no, it can't be, you're an anti-Semite, you're making this up, you're distorting it, all they have to do is turn to page 676 in my book, and there is the page from the Talmud and the commentary, the authoritative commentary from Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, who is today the head of the reconstituted Sanhedrin. Probably a lot of your listeners don't even know the Sanhedrin's been reconstituted. The same one that railroaded our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ has been reconstituted in Tiberias. The head of the Sanhedrin, known as the Nasi, N-A-S-I, or Prince, is Adin Steinsaltz, and this is his authoritative translation of this Talmud passage. So it's undeniable that this exists within Judaism, and also on the heterosexual side, we have the occult worship of the goddess in Judaism, both as the benevolent white witch Shekinah and this black magical filth goddess of Lilith, because according to the Kabbalah, and the Kabbalah, by the way, many people will be told, well, a lot of Orthodox rabbis are suspicious of the Kabbalah. Not the Hasidic ones, not the Chabad Lubavitch, not the ones who are in the White House hobnobbing with Reagan and Bush and who knows what Obama will do. They follow the Kabbalah as well as the Talmud. That's undeniable. And in the Kabbalah, It says that Lilith preceded Eve and engaged in sex magic with Adam by use of the sacred name of YHVH. And one of the books of the Kabbalah is the Zohar, and it says that Lilith reincarnated as King Solomon's Queen of Sheba. And they even have a whole story about when a young man, it's very neurotic and psychotic to be a Judaic believer. This is why Freud invented psychiatry. It wasn't in order to treat us Gentiles. It was because he was dealing with all the screwed up people who were victims of Judaism in Vienna, Austria. And one of the hang-ups they give these teenage kids is that if they undergo the normal and natural phenomenon of a nocturnal emission, that means they've had sex with the demon goddess Lilith, and they produce amulets and everything. And I found in my research that even though the amulets are claimed as a way of warding her off, it's actually a way, because this is so dishonest, it's actually a way, it's a sub rosa means of keeping her image in front of their eyes. And then the Shekinah is a whole nother can of worms. This white witch, which is supposed to be synonymous with God and which is threaded through the Kabbalah as well, and there's a great deal of sex magic lore connected with that. And so what you really have, Tex, is you have a whole aura, a whole milieu of illicit, illegitimate, degenerate sex that filters its way through the sacred religious texts of Judaism, and these young people confront this in a variety of scenarios, both from the open legislation that involves molestation of boys younger than 9 years old, including by their mothers, as I establish in my book from the rabbinic text, and the molestation of little girls from under the age of 3, because it's not considered sexuality. That's the loophole they create. If a mother has performs a sex act, you could say, well, how can a boy under 9 years of age have sex? Well, there, I don't want to go into specifics because tender ears may be listening, but there are obviously, there is oral sex that can be performed on a little boy. All of this is legitimate in Orthodox Judaism, and I even give I cite criminal cases where there's been a divorce and the mother and father have split up and one is accusing the other in court, and they actually talk about how, for example, in the case I cite in my book where the mother was molesting the boy and the father was videotaping it. And of course it was all according to the Talmud, so it wasn't on religious grounds that there were any objections, but they were trying to use this in a divorce case in order to get custody. So it does leak out, but you really have to be fine-tuned to where you get this. Otherwise, you'd be under the complete misapprehension that Orthodox Judaics are pious and highly conservative people, because they put on a big show. They riot when the so-called gay rights activists march in Jerusalem. They're rioting because they're giving the game away. If you have a lot of homosexual Judaics parading in the city of Jerusalem, it might lead people to wonder where they got their inspiration. That's why they want to suppress it, not from a moral objection.
Mm. Wow. So we're talking about the molestation of kids actually being approved. I remember when a Jewish rabbi advised Bill Clinton that oral sex between he and Monica Lewinsky was not against the Talmud. And, you know, it made you wonder when Bill Clinton made the statement, I did not have sex with that woman. Maybe he was listening to the rabbi. Well, I'll tell you, Michael Hoffman, we run out of time here. It's been great being with you these last two programs. Judaism Discovered is the book, and it's a tremendous book. And, folks, you can get it by going to our website, powerofprophecy.com, or calling us 1-800-234-9673. Michael, thank you so much for being on the program today and last week as well. And we need to do this again because you have a power-packed book here.
Thank you, Tex. I hope that your listeners and readers appreciate how courageous you are. And if I may just mention, my website is at www.revisionisthistory.org.
All right, revisionisthistory.org. Wonderful. Thanks again, my brother Michael. Appreciate your being with us.
Thank you, Tex.
All right. Until next week, my friends, this is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy, and it's my fervent prayer that you will tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.